Squid Game Season 2 has deadly games, tense shootouts, and inventive set pieces galore, but it's also filled with lines of dialogue that take on a whole new meaning once you've navigated the follow-up's many twists and turns. Warning, spoilers for all of Season 2 ahead. Right out of the gate, heavy lines are exchanged between Song Gi-hun and the enigmatic frontman. Picking up from the cliffhanger at the end of the Season 1 finale, Gi-hun chooses to leave his plane to America, and by extension, his family, to chase after the orchestrators of the games. He makes sure the frontman knows of his intentions to hunt him down no matter the cost.
How about you stop running your mouth and show yourself? Stop hiding like a rat.
In Squid Game, characters are constantly compared to animals in a way that dehumanizes them. Moments before, in the same conversation, Gi-hun tells the frontman,
"Listen carefully. I'm not a horse. I'm a person."
Gi-hun also calls the mysterious unnamed recruiter a dog, and Hwan Jun-ho is referred to at one point as a pig. Interestingly, the VIPs who enjoy the games at the end of Season 1 do so through animal masks, in a way dehumanizing themselves to make it easier to watch such a grotesque spectacle. In the season premiere, Gi-hun experiences a nightmare in which he is visited by the frontman at the Pink Hotel.
"Player 456, looking for these."
He's holding the decapitated heads of Cho Sung-woo and Kang Se-byeok, players 218 and 67, respectively. They're his closest friends from the first game, and the last two players to die before he won. Though simple, this line calls into question what Gi-hun is actually looking for in the investigation, and lays out both his inner conflict and one of the season's core ideas. On the one hand, Gi-hun believes he's shutting down the games because it's the right thing to do, playing the hero as the frontman will ultimately mock in the season finale. But there's also an aspect of Gi-hun's quest that is embroiled in guilt, arguably more than he realizes. Gi-hun places all responsibility for the lives lost in his games on the frontman and his co-conspirators. But this season seeks to challenge that by honing in on the responsibility he debatably shares for returning to the games after knowing the stakes. One of the more surprising storylines sees Gi-hun team up with Sunshine Capital, specifically the vicious debt collectors who once tormented him. Having repaid his debt to them, Gi-hun then starts paying the men to aid in his search for the frontman. This search begins with an aggressive hunt for the recruiter, who is found in a public square offering struggling people a choice between a lottery ticket and a bread roll.
"Maybe he's not so bad."
This line, said at the beginning of an obviously cruel game, reflects similar games played by real people at the expense of others' dignity. This form of charity is seen all over social media, where the powerful coerce vulnerable people to make tough choices, embarrass themselves, and get used for content creation, all while being seen by many as acting with genuine kindness. As the Sunshine Capital men watch the recruiter play this banally evil game and subsequently destroy the bread before the eyes of those who needed it, the same question is on everyone's mind. Why? Why go through all this trouble just to end it this way? We get a clue through the recruiter's line before he begins to stomp on the bread. He says,
"I'm not the one here who wasted this. That was you people."
On the surface, he's talking about the bread, but the subtext here sure seems reflective of his view on the games themselves. In a season all about the nature of personal accountability in exploitative systems, the recruiter reveals his own fascinatingly messed up internal logic. He isn't responsible for anyone's death, whether inside the games or out. Competitors and homeless people alike threw their own lives away in his eyes, turning them into trash, as he describes them later during his confrontation with Gi-hun. As to why the recruiter goes through this seemingly self-imposed ritual, it's likely he needs this reaffirmation of his worldview in the same way Oh Il-nam sought similar comfort through the game he played with Gi-hun in his final moments. The game and the ultimate proclamation are the recruiter's ritual to maintain his own sense of reality, based on the moral code of personal freedom of choice. The recruiter's view of personal responsibility eventually comes back to bite him when he comes face to face with the barrel of a gun. The ironic thing is that he had a way out. When given the gun for the last time, he could have easily just shot his opponent, but that would have been breaking the rules. Not only the rules of the game, but of the worldview that has seemingly guided the recruiter's entire life. Shattering that illusion was apparently more terrifying than death itself. In the aftermath, when his body is discovered, Gi-hun has some cold words for Jun-ho.
"I wasn't the one who fired the gun. We played a game and he just happened to lose."
To some extent, Gi-hun shares certain parts of the recruiter's worldview. On top of that, it also calls back to the end of Season 1, when Cho Sung-woo died by suicide in order for Gi-hun to win. With the amount of guilt Gi-hun clearly carries, being haunted by Sang-woo's spirit, as another character later divines, it's possible he's been telling himself this line since long before the recruiter died. With the help of Hwang Jun-ho and their mercenary contractors, Song Gi-hun finally gets what he's been after, an audience with the front man, sort of. Once again, their confrontation is reduced to a phone call, this time in the back of a limousine. The front man's voice comes from a speaker hidden inside a pig. It appears to be identical to the piggy bank that hangs over the contestants in the games. It also might be a sly nod to the fact that he's secretly a former police officer, or pig, as one of the characters would call him.
Did you really think you could end the game like this? With one little gun.
This touches on an idea that will become central to the season once Gi-hun re-enters into the games: voting as a mode of action versus violence.
We have to end this right now, so we can get out of here alive! Everyone!
At the end of the season, when Gi-hun finally chooses violence after several disappointing elections, an undercover Hwang In-ho, aka the frontman, subtly calls back to this taunt with a question.
How are you gonna fight them? After all, they've got guns.
Well, it turns out he's not too shabby with a gun either. When we first get back to the games, one of the newcomers is player 44, Sonyo. A self-professed shaman, she immediately gravitates toward Gi-hun and somehow deduces that he's being haunted by the dead. Whether or not she's genuinely psychic, this line clearly stirs in Gi-hun's memories of Cho Sang-woo and Kang Se-byeok. Because of these ghosts, she also correctly surmises that Gi-hun is not exactly there by choice.
You didn't come here of your own volition.
This line positions Sonyo as one extreme with regard to the season's central theme of choice. To her, choice does not exist, only destiny. But it also points to the fact that here, one's freedom of choice can be undermined by the system they exist in, calling into question whether or not the freedom to choose really exists at all. On the other end of the spectrum is player 100, Im Jong-dae. With the massive debt of 10 billion won, nearly $6.8 million, it's implied that he carries the greatest personal debt of anyone in the games. However, when this is brought up by one of the guards during the orientation, he speaks proudly of his burden.
They don't give out 10 billion to just anyone! You have to work in the big leagues for that!
With this comment, he aims to elevate his superior status among the other contestants, who accept his framing and treat him as a smart businessman. It also deflects accountability. His debt wasn't a moral hazard because he was a wealthy businessman in what's allegedly a merit-based society, and not just some average poor person. But the truth is that he's in the same predicament as everyone else, and he's also a significantly worse person. By leading the charge for the games to continue, he's forcing more vulnerable people to take accountability for his financial mistakes. No matter how deluded he is, he's not better than anyone, but he is uniquely detestable. When Gi-hun willingly sends himself back into the games, he does so because he's secretly concealing a tracking device in one of his molars. Or at least he thinks he is. In theory, this tracking device would allow Jun-ho and the mercenaries to find the island even easier, though to do so they unfortunately enlist the help of the duplicitous Captain Park. As they head toward the beacon, emitting a signal from a nearby island, Park shares with Jun-ho that he's actually familiar with the island. He says,
"These days, nobody really goes out there except to fish on shore."
With the twist in mind, this line slyly reveals that Park was probably the one who hid the molar implant after it was removed from Gi-hun's mouth. It's eventually found on the island with a fisherman, fitting in a box of literal bait, at which point Park is safe on the boat where he cannot be identified by that very fisherman as the culprit. After episode 3's twist reveal, the next episode sees Hwang In-ho and Song Gi-hun confront each other face-to-face for the first time. Though Gi-hun is none the wiser, he's in the presence of his arch-nemesis. In-ho, on the other hand, immediately endears himself to Gi-hun despite his own yes vote in the initial election, telling him that he voted to stay because he believed Gi-hun could help them survive.
After the first game, I thought I was gonna quit. And then I saw you.
Already, In-ho is laying the groundwork to destroy Gi-hun's heroic sensibilities, which don't exactly jive with his own callous sensibilities. For this plan to reach its full effect, though, he needs to also undermine Gi-hun in the eyes of the other players, so he waits until Gi-hun is surrounded by scared contestants and insists that Gi-hun must know what the next game is.
Sir, you know what's next, don't you?
As a consequence, when the next challenge turns out not to be the Honeycombs game, the other players blame him and rally around figures like Im Jong-dae, who will continue to push the games forward. Because Kong Noel refuses to stand aside and allow the organ harvesters to do their work, they begin violently intimidating her, first by forcing entry into her room and assaulting her.
F***ing commies gotta love fights.
Noel is a North Korean defector, and as such has been derisively branded a commie by her enemies. The divide between North and South Korea has created deeply anti-communist attitudes in the capitalist South. It's not uncommon for politicians, such as South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, currently facing arrest for his failed attempt at enacting martial law, to label political enemies as communists in order to rally support against them. Midway through the season, surviving players are starting to dream of life outside the games, including Chung Jung-cha. She's already planning a dinner party and inviting everyone from her team to join. In the process, she finds out that her new friends all surprisingly live, at max, a half hour away from her.
How on earth do we all end up living so close? That can't be a coincidence. This is fate!
She's right. It's probably not a coincidence at all. It's more likely that the recruiters spend most of their time in poorer neighborhoods, intercepting potential contestants via public transportation, like the bus Hyung-Chu could take to meet up with them. In Thanos' crew, a smaller storyline develops around the relationship between the soft-spoken Park Min-soo and his surrogate big sister, Se-mi. As they head into the third and final game before all hell breaks loose in the dorms, Se-mi warns Min-soo against trying to fit in with Thanos' crew, because he isn't like them and, from her perspective, shouldn't want to be. He's at risk of dying in the games and needs to vote with her against them.
You won't last in a place like this.
In the following game, Mingle, Min-soo sadly proves her wrong when he turns his back on her in order to secure a place in Thanos' safe group of three. She survives also, having found a group of two to join, but clearly loses faith in Min-soo as a person. That said, it's debatable that Min-soo saved them both, as they could just as easily have wasted time wandering with other inseparable groups of two who refused to make the cutthroat sacrifices Thanos did. This line also winds up being darkly ironic, as Min-soo outlives Se-mi during the EXO massacre. In Gi-hun and In-ho's group, Mingle poses less stressing moral dilemmas, at least at first. When a number is called that requires them to exclude one member from safety, In-ho readily volunteers, disappearing in the crowd. He emerges afterward unharmed and is left somewhat ambiguous as to whether or not he actually found a group or was simply spared by the guards due to his status. In the middle of this, there is potentially a clue that if he wasn't outright avoiding the consequences of the game, In-ho was possibly made aware of upcoming numbers.
If we have to form groups of six next round, then we won't need anyone else.
It's not the next round, but two rounds later, the game does, in fact, require everyone to get in groups of six. If In-ho took advantage of the opportunity to disappear to get advance information on the upcoming number, he kept that info close to his chest, and the misleading joke about the baby being number six appears to have been a smokescreen to help further sell his fake identity. One of the most heartbreaking storylines of the season is that of Geumja, who entered the game to pay off her son's debts, only to find him in there with her. Young-sik carries a lot of shame due to how his debts have impacted his mother, yet votes to continue the games before the mingle round in order to pay them off himself. During the game, he and his mother are separated, and it briefly seems as though he sacrificed her for his own survival. When it turns out they both survived, he cries to her and attempts to apologize for abandoning her.
It's okay, we're both here. No, sweetheart, it's okay. Both here, that's what matters.
This isn't just about them surviving the game, but her accepting that even though she's had to bail out her son time and again, their mutual survival in the world is what matters most. It's a moment of total forgiveness that allows her to let go of the resentment that has been present throughout their time in the games. In the final episode of the season, Gi-hun and Hwang In-ho seemingly team up to take down the games once and for all. During the initial firefight, In-ho saves Gi-hun's life, and Gi-hun thanks him, leading the secret frontman to say this deliciously ironic line.
After this is over, buy me a drink.
This line could also be another subtle connection between In-ho and Oh Il-nam, the creator of the Squid Game competition. When Il-nam and Gi-hun meet outside the games for the first time in Season 1, the two share a drink on Gi-hun's dime. And when Gi-hun arrives at Il-nam's deathbed, the camera and script make a point of emphasizing when Il-nam asks Gi-hun to pour him a drink. Gi-hun clearly has a habit of unwittingly serving his enemies.